You pressed play on this podcast with the click of curiosity. It is another dimension, a dimension of mind, a dimension where nothing is sacred and everything is explainable. You're streaming into a land of both inside and outside, of things and ideas. You've just crossed over into the midside.
Welcome to the midside, where we too believe in the First Amendment and boobs. I'm your host, Justin M. Wisniewski, and if you believe in the First Amendment and boobs, please tell a friend who believes in those two things as well. Alternately, you can support us through Patreon, patreon.com/themidside or themidside.com/patreon, or you can check out themidside.com/store and pick up some t-shirts. We've got our False Dichotomy Bro t-shirts on there and our Hail Snyder t-shirts on there, or you can just go for a more classic look with just the simple logo. I'm going to be getting one of those soon. Joining me this trip from our nation's capital, Daniel T. Richards.
Fuck Comcast and fuck DirecTV.
Why is that?
That's what I have to say. I spend, and many people spend, a significant amount of money to have either cable internet or DirecTV's Sunday Ticket, which is what I bought so I could watch all the Patriots games. Both my cable and the Sunday Ticket do not work this week. They are both out of commission, and the respective Twitter accounts for Comcast and Sunday Ticket say, oh, we're aware of the issues. We're working on it. It's like, oh, okay, well, are you going to refund my money for this week? Fuck no. You can go fuck yourself.
So do we have a new answer to last week's Reddit question about what's the biggest waste of money we're all forced to participate in?
I just cannot wait for this cable and satellite monopoly to be fucking decimated. Just utterly eviscerated, destroyed, turned to dust, and something new rise from its ashes because it is terrible. And they just do not care. Their customer service is utter trash.
Yeah, and we're getting there. We're getting there. Like, I don't have cable. Thanks to Midsider Alfred, I use a login and I do all their streaming services. It's completely legal, just to be clear, everyone out there. It's completely legal. And, you know, we can talk more about football stuff on our football show, Belichick Your Premises, now releasing every Tuesday on our official stream. But it's to the point now where you should just be able to pay $300 a season or $500 a season or whatever price they set it at that's reasonable, and then you can watch the whole season online streaming.
And that is, you know, that is what DirecTV bills itself as, the Sunday Ticket, although it's a lie in many cases. You can't watch every game and many games are blacked out and it's a bunch of crap. But then literally there is some issue every week, and some issues are annoying and some issues are just mildly frustrating, and this week it is just doesn't work. Not there.
Well, that's why you're in the midside.
There are only 16 weeks, Justin.
I know.
Are they going to refund me 1/16 of the money?
That would be an interesting court case to bring up.
No, they're not. Okay. Okay. And a rant that everyone is aware of, i.e., white guy complains about streaming services.
Football streaming services, yeah.
That's right.
Well, that's why you're in the midside, and also joining us on this trip into the midside from the hills of white privilege, James Elias.
It's good to be here. Good to be on the midside. Nice and comfortable, not wearing any clothes as we record, as usual, and ready to start the show.
I actually have underwear on today, though that's the only thing I have on. So, Daniel, how do you feel that 2/3 of us are basically naked?
Pardon me while I go put on a burka.
Are you getting that from your wife's closet?
That's right. Many to choose from. Black or dark black?
Speaking of black and women, let's talk about Jemele Hill in the news with Daniel T. Richards.
Well, I assure you, Mr. Listener, it really is that bad. These aren't harmless criminals. This isn't just a fad.
ESPN is in trouble yet again, as one of their reporters, did I say her name? Jemele Hill? Jemele Hill? Jemele
Hill? I don't
Hill.
Know.
I have no
it's
idea.
Not, not JML Hill.
It's not JML Hill. Has called President Trump a white supremacist, In fact, the tweet quote here is, Donald Trump is a white supremacist who has largely surrounded himself with other white supremacists. She went on to say, the height of white privilege is being able to, quote, ignore his white supremacy because it's no threat to you. Well, it's a threat to me. Trump is the most ignorant, offensive president of my lifetime. His rise is a direct result of white supremacy. Period. She wrote out period, by the way. I didn't enunciate her punctuation. She wrote the word period because the punctuation was just not enough there. That's a rhetorical tactic.
I figured she was just using speech to text.
Yes, indeed.
speech to tweet.
She took to the air on ESPN Sports Center last Wednesday, and basically nothing happened. And that's sort of the controversy, right? Which is that President Trump's press secretary, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, told reporters that this was a, quote, fireable offense for the network, basically insinuating that ESPN should fire her. She kind of apologized on Twitter, basically saying, like, look, this, I don't represent ESPN. These are my personal views. But many co-hosts, anchors, whatever, have been fired for much less here. So that's sort of what the controversy is. Justin, one, is this an example of the conservative side of the snowflake movement? And then two, what the fuck is she talking about?
What the fuck is she talking about as far as Trump being a white supremacist?
And his, you know, his rise being a direct result of white supremacy and his white supremacy being a threat to her.
Yeah, I mean, that's what she's talking about is, oh, I'm sitting here in my perfectly pristine, well-paid position in Connecticut at ESPN, and everything I am is a result of white supremacy. If that's white supremacy, it's doing pretty well for you, Jemele Hill. You should support it if that's white supremacy. What she's talking about is she's just towing the party line because that's how she got to where she is. She got to where she is by playing the game and telling people what they want to hear. I mean, that's her entire job. That's what these ESPN anchors do, is they just repeat what people want to hear, what makes them feel good. Right. This is like it's like comfort television. It's like you turn on the TV and you hear these people say the Patriots are cheaters and you feel good about it. That's what she does. So that's what this is, where the prevailing wind is blowing. So that's what she's saying. So she's just talking out of her ass. I mean, it's virtue signaling. Right. As far as is it a fireable offense? That can only be decided by the company, right? The company decides what's fireable about them or what's fireable about an offense or not. The issue here is, look at what they did with Kurt Schilling. Kurt Schilling was a noted conservative commentator, and he was a sports hero. Everyone out there is groaning right now because they know he played for the Red Sox and won the World Series. But no, he was one of the people who helped break the curse for Fenway, and he is a Hall of Fame pitcher. I don't know if he's in there yet, but he's good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. And that's the kind of person you want doing your analysis. I mean, look at how well Tony Romo did on Sunday. These are the kind of players you want commentating once they finish playing. But he was fired for his beliefs and for voicing his beliefs. Wasn't it an anti-transgender meme? Is that what he was fired for?
I don't remember at this point. It all just sort of blends together, but that sounds vaguely familiar.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was an anti-transgender meme, and he was fired for it. So the point is, if you're going to do it for one side, you need to do it for both. You can't do it for one side and not the other. Well, you can. I mean, again, it's your company. You can do whatever the fuck you want, but you're fucking retarded, and we'll call you on it. But then the whole worst thing about it is... And I know it's the Trump strategy to rally his side against the media, but why the fuck is the White House press secretary commenting on Jemele Hill?
It gets worse than that. Yes. Trump himself tweeted out that ESPN was losing a bunch of viewers because their politicization, and he deserved an apology. And so, yes.
Oh, so yes, but here's right the exact. There is the president as Snowflake. He deserves an apology.
Here's President Snowflake, the exact quote. ESPN is paying a really big price for its politics and bad programming. People are dumping it in record numbers. Apologize for untruth! Exclamation point.
You know what the worst part is? That tweet makes us look bad, because how long have we been trumpeting that?
Well, that's it. Okay. Fuck Trump, and also fuck Jemele Hill. Because false dichotomy,
fuck everyone! Bro. Welcome to the midside.
That's right. So, Jemele Hill is an idiot talking about something she's using this whole white supremacy thing as a power move. She knows it. Everyone knows it. Shut the hell up, Jemil Hill. Donald Trump, get the fuck off Twitter. We've said this before. And we were hating on ESPN long before you were the president of the United States. So we're going to continue hating on ESPN. But one more thing about this. Oh, the meta thing about this, I want to say, whether it's Kurt Schilling or Jemil Hill, why I brought this up as a question to you, Justin, was this is just snowflakeism on both sides, which is, and it's not really snowflakeism. People aren't really hurt by this, but they sort of want to play the, oh, if our side's going to get in trouble for doing it, your side should get in trouble for doing it. Stop caring.
Just... Yeah, you're seeding the fucking premise of the whole premise. If you don't want a world where everyone's up in everyone else's business and we're constantly like, oh, well, that was an offensive thing you said and now you have to apologize because you hurt my feelings. Like, if you're against that, which the conservatives once were, you can't turn their own logic around on them. This is the mistake the conservatives make on all sorts of issues, where they try to turn the left's logic against them, which I get it. It makes sense. The problem is that they then take it seriously, and now they've just won the point, because that was the only, turning the philosophical point against free speech and towards snowflakeism ubiquitously was their plan, was just the kind of the goal all along, was to make it so words can't be used ever.
Right, and if they, you want to talk about them trying to turn the leftist logic against them completely, I mean, they did it in the worst way possible with electing the president of the United States of America. And now they're mad because he keeps contradicting the things he promised and contradicting the Republican Party platform. Oh, yeah, I'm going to get rid of Obamacare. Oh, we still have Obamacare.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to kick out all the illegal immigrants. Oh, let's talk about amnesty.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're reaping what they sow. Totally. Which is ridiculous. Well, one thing you can't reap or sow in California if you're a drone manufacturer is weed. That's right. California legislature, coming up with regulations having to do with recreational use of marijuana, has decided that cannabis cannot be delivered by drone. Yes. The proposed program description for the Medical and Adult Use Cannabis Regulation and Safety Act, also known as MAUCRASA, says, quote, cannabis goods will be required to be transported inside commercial vehicles or trailers. Transportation may not be done by aircraft, watercraft, rail, drones, human-powered vehicles, or unmanned vehicles. This, of course, means a lot of startups like MDelivers and Ease, who are, in fact, drone marijuana delivery businesses, are kind of told to fuck themselves. Justin, is this this is pretty typical California, right? Like, this is California being California.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. This is why you can't get excited about any sort of, like, freedom that seems to be voted for in California, because they immediately sit around and figure out a way to make it not free anymore. Like, I didn't vote in the election, and people are like, well, why don't you vote in the local election? Like, they're voting for marijuana to be legalized. That's for freedom. It's like, you don't understand.
Yeah.
They're going to find a way to make this not free. I mean, literally, this sounds like they were sitting around a table like, hey, guys, how can we figure out a way to regulate marijuana? And what's the most ridiculous way possible? Oh, we can't let them deliver it via bicycles.
That's right. But this is exactly the problem. And it's a problem that sort of went unnoticed for a while and is now getting a ton of notice, which is something called the administrative state or the regulatory state. And it's basically the idea that when people were voting for legalized marijuana in California, you got to read the ballot initiative. The ballot initiative said something like, you know, the recreational use of pot shall herefore be legal with, you know, the knowledge that the California state regulatory agency will come up with guidelines for how to implement this policy. Well, turns out those guidelines mean we can come up with whatever restrictions we want, and if you want to get rid of them, you have to have another ballot measure. So basically, you said, yeah, we want legal pot, except that we're going to give the government to basically make it as difficult as possible for us to actually use legal pot. This happens everywhere. This is the entire... The big example on the federal level is the entire... Environmental Protection Bill, the Clean Air and Water Act, which is like, it's something stupidly short, but all it basically says is like, for heretofore, the Environmental Protection Agency shall be created to come up with regulations for how to make our water clean and our air clean. End of story. Here, bureaucrats, have an entire administrative edifice. See you later. And then basically the EPA gets to make up any rules they want. And the courts have said, as long as those rules have some sort of rational basis, as long as they make some sort of rational, internally logical sense, we have to follow them, because that's what the law says.
Yeah, but this is California. They don't even have to make rational, internally logical sense. I mean, what is the objection to drones or bicycle delivery? I mean, that just sounds like anti-small business if I've ever heard it. And, you know, so you're out here and the left is anti-corporations. Well, aren't they just saying only weed corporations can deliver weed? That's what that bill sounds like. And second of all, what the fuck is a human-powered vehicle? Like, you can drive it in a tractor trailer? Like, that sounds like a human-powered vehicle to me. Like, I understand there's an internal combustion engine, but who's turning the engine on and off and steering the car? What the fuck is a human-powered vehicle?
You know that that device that Mr. Garrison drove on South Park, the IT, where you have to put a device inside your anus and one in your mouth simultaneously and work them both in order to get
the thing to move? I thought the movie was going to be about when I went to go see it.
You were sorely disappointed, I'm sure.
Well, not sorely.
James, this is ridiculous on its face, but this is incredibly insidious to me. Like, this is basically a bunch of legislators saying, "Oh, you voted for freedom? Oh, silly you."
Yeah, this is actually, in my experience, I don't have anything particularly deep to say on this, but I do have some experience involving some like freedom actually leading to less freedom. And here's what I mean by that is when I moved to Pennsylvania to start going to grad school in Pittsburgh, I was really pleased to see that they had much leaner gun restrictions than in California, obviously. But on top of that, they also had state-run hunting grounds and a lot of target practice. A lot of these hunting grounds, they have places to shoot your gun, which I thought, oh my god, this is so great. Not only are they less anti-gun than California, but they're practically pro-gun. There's like places you can just go out and shoot. And so when I'd show up, there's this incredible list of rules. You're only allowed to put 3 bullets into the magazine of your rifle while firing, and only 6 bullets into the magazine of a pistol while firing. And it says, like, these by decree of the Department of Fun Reduction, you know, like they're gonna, you know, and the fine is something on the order of $20,000 for breaking any of these rules. And there's tons of them. And so after I saw that, I just said, fuck it. I'm not doing this. I'm going to just go out into the desert in California and shoot my guns there. Just so what was interesting is like you're better off just shooting your guns under the radar somewhere just out in the middle of nowhere where no one's going to see you at all, rather than going to a place that's completely legal and encouraged to fire your weapon. Similarly, we may reach a point in which people will you know, want the good old days of when weed was illegal, because then it's just you find the right dealer, you buy some weed off of him, and you smoke it. We don't have to deal with all this horse shit of how to obtain the weed legally and enjoy it.
Right.
So it's kind of a weird system there.
Yeah, and all this does, by the way, state of California, is encourage people to be more like Uber when Uber started up, which is basically, oh, you have these laws, that's nice, I'm going to do this anyway, until I'm so popular that you can't outlaw me, basically. And that's what this kind of stuff encourages. It literally encourages people to work under the radar, to work outside the bounds of the laws, because the laws are so stupidly ridiculous.
I mean, it's like driving nowadays, right? Like turning on the left-hand red arrow. I mean, it's the same concept.
Yes. And that's what Adam Carolla, you know, talks about 19 minutes in to the show, Adam Carolla, which is that, you know, at some point, the government becomes your adversary. Like, they're supposed to be this entity that is nominally there to keep you safe and to provide you with services, but at some point, they just become an adversary, And so it is totally fine to give them the middle finger and do things that make your life better, because that is not their proper role.
Hey, liberty.me folks, libertarians, I would argue the government is always your adversary, so I'm with you.
Thank you for syndicating us, liberty.me. Okay, so turns out there's a downside to being popular in high school, a new study says. What? It turns out that having close friendships during adolescence is associated with decreases in anxiety and depressive symptoms and increases in self-worth later in life. So that's the good part, according to a new study by the Journal of Child Development. But the study also found that being popular in high school was tied to having higher social anxiety by adulthood. In other words, your friendship as a teenager sort of set in motion your later social well-being and how you manage relationships as adults. That could be true for a variety of reasons, this is a quote, potentially including the fact that the teenage years are when the first major non-family relationships and attachments are formed. Justin, is this one of these studies that you like to say is one of the everyone knew this kind of thing?
Like, yeah.
You know, thank you for validating literally something that anyone could see if they have fucking eyes and a brain kind of study.
Thank you for, like, stealing my entire point. Like, yeah, okay, ditto, retweet. Mm-hmm. No, I mean, no, like...
Retweet out loud.
Yeah.
That's not how life
this
works.
This just in. Stop hijacking me. Stop derailing me.
Okay.
This just in. Everything in life has a downside, Justin in the Midside says. There you go. Study complete. Moving on with our lives. Like, seriously, like, nobody thought being popular would have a downside. We need a study to tell us this.
Yeah.
And also, to be more specific about this, I'm actually really confused either maybe by the wording, I just can't read it properly, or just what the study says. So the study says if you are more popular, you have higher social anxiety as an adult?
Yes.
I had no friends and I had higher social anxiety until I went to therapy. So maybe the study should just be like everyone has high social anxiety?
I don't know. I mean, it's... The study is one of these sociology studies that, I mean, I guess it's a study by that sense, but, like, it's basically you talk to teenagers, ask them questions, and write down their answers, and then later on you come up with conclusions.
If you look at the, if you look at the results, it actually says, like, did you go all the way to the end where it says the number of people who actually completed the study? It's, like, under 100 or some shit.
No, yeah. No, it was 148 who actually completed it. Yeah, it was the majority. Okay. It was the vast majority.
Was it? I thought it was much less than that.
That's how I remember it. Yeah,
but
it's something
still,
like
80%. We're making a grand statement on humanity. And Daniel, this will lead back into your point about the way the methodologies they have here. A grand statement about being popular in high school because 148 people were in this study.
Yeah, I've been in these kind of not participated, but like, in grad school, we'd have to do some of these kind of studies for, you know, ethnography class or, you know, study, you know, research methods in the humanities and whatever. And it's like, it's a bunch of crap. It's total crap. You're asking people questions and you're basically doing what modern day journalists do, which is, what can I ask them to get the answer that I've already decided is the answer? I'm really skeptical of all these sort of sociology and soft science studies. They're mostly garbage. I don't know, James, maybe you're a tiny
my work is specifically in philosophy of science and specifically induction, like what allows you to grasp a causal connection, or it's like what allows you to come up with a generalization scientifically. And it's, you have to grasp a causal connection. Why does this lead to this? How is it that this leads to this? And this study, even though it, like, what's interesting is it confirms, like we've been saying, it gives some data towards something that we always kind of suspected to be correct. But the problem is that the data on its own doesn't say a fucking thing. If you wanted to, like, let's propose a hypothesis. You know, I don't know if this is right, but you could propose a hypothesis like this. The social structure in high schools is such that the people who have lots of friends don't have very deep friendships, and as a result do not derive the true psychological benefits of friendship from those friendships. As a result, later in life, they are less socially adept. Yeah. So, you know, and so that's an interesting hypothesis. You'd have, and maybe you could do some sort of statistical study to examine that particular hypothesis. In this study, I don't see any particular causal route sketched and tested. It's just kind of like, okay, well, let's just get some data. Here's the data. And what it does is that there's a hypothesis that's sort of hinted at and then sort of like backhandedly confirmed, but we don't know exactly what hypothesis was being tested and confirmed. So, James,
you're saying in a really complicated, long-winded manner is correlation is not causation.
That is part of that statement doesn't
yes
apply
and,
here.
Motherfucker.
That state no, but this is yes and that's not how this works. Like that's not
fine. You followed the appropriate form. Like, I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, that's worth bringing up because it's easy to think that's what's going on here. But the thing is that scientists generally know that truth. You won't see them generally making that error. The error is that they'll say, we're going to look for correlations and then just make you feel as though there's some sort of causation, but we won't explicitly identify it. We're not looking for causation because we all know because correlation doesn't imply causation, they essentially have just given up on identifying causation. So it's just data. It's just fucking data. Because when you put forward a hypothesis, you could end up being wrong or something. I don't know what motivates them. I think they just don't think you can find – I just think they don't believe in cause and effect anymore. So as a result, they've stopped looking for it.
And you want to know what the problem is. As this goes on and this data sort of exists more and more, in the later seasons it becomes lore.
Oh my god.
Nice.
I just got that insanely, insanely nerdy joke.
I understood that immediately.
Oh wow, that took... Someone looked that up. We're not going to tell you what it is. Just look it up. James, what you said about the hypothesis potentially being wrong is one of the things that seriously was never taught to me once in any science class or any research methodology class in all of school. And then it's sort of like when I was doing a study with someone at a school outside of where I was going and they said, oh, it just looks like our hypothesis is null. We'll just have to start over again with a different hypothesis. I was like, it was like a watershed moment for me. It was like, oh, all these humanities people just are going to evade the fact that their hypothesis could be wrong. And they're basically just going to do anything they can in order to make their hypothesis true.
Yeah.
And it's
part of the problem
disingenuous.
Part of the problem is that we have a very poor understanding of what hypothesis is supposed to be. I don't think hypothesis is a very fundamentally important part of the scientific method. I don't think it's essential. Like, but it's taught to us as though it is. The problem, the problem is that even if you confirm your hypothesis with the study, you now basically are in this position where you're like, oh great, like the data was consistent with our hypothesis. I hope that keeps being the case, you know, because for all you know, the next study could just rule out your hypothesis.
But right, the black swan problem. The problem
exactly. And the problem with a black swan style generalization is that it's only based on experience. It's not based on the grasp of any kind of causal relationship. So for the black swan case, you know that animals come in all sorts of colors. You've seen that people can be all sorts of different colors. You've seen dogs could be all sorts of colors.
I don't see color, James. I only see the content of character.
But they're still essentially the same species despite their different colors. And so when you see a bunch of white swans, there's no reason to think they're all going to end up white. And so there's no... But on the other hand, like if you see that all polar bears are white, then you say, well, it's pretty freaking... positive to have white fur out in the Arctic, so maybe all polar bears are white. And a generalization like that is much closer to being true because you've grasped a causal connection due to having a theory of evolution, blah, blah, blah. But they just don't do that. They don't propose causal connections. So it's just like, hey, our hypothesis turned out to be right. See, I hope it keeps being that way.
See, you're sounding too smart, so here I have to come in with a dumb comment to derail your entire train of thought, which
Perfect.
Is that polar bear's fur is actually clear. It's not white.
It is?
Yes. In fact,
oh, cool.
There was a zoo I forget where, but it was close to where I was living in L.A., maybe? Anyway, they were giving the polar bear an antibiotic that turned its skin purple, and thus it was a purple polar bear.
What?
The bear was actually translucent.
So cool.
But where do polar bears come from? Is it Bear Village?
Yes, it's Bear Village, Justin, which is just south of Bearburg, which is a little bit north of Bearville. I don't know.
So I have a hypothesis and a possible causal connection for you all based upon this story.
All right.
Is this just more hatred of the good, where they're just looking for an excuse because these fucking people in the humanities were jealous of the popular kids in high school, so it's like, let's do a study to prove that their life actually sucked?
Oh god, that's probably true.
Yeah, that is. I mean, usually we'd be like, no, fuck you, you're psychologizing, but in this case, knowing people in the humanities, it's almost certainly true. Yeah. You know what else is almost certainly true? That Devin Farsi is a complete and utter prick. At least according to this article in the Daily Beast, in their performative allyship section. What the fuck is that? Okay, anyway.
Those are people who pretend to be social justice warriors, but they're only doing it to put on a performance.
You know, they make me hate language. They really do. Okay. How a sexual assault accusation against a, quote, feminist film blogger shook up the indie film world. The strange case of film blogger Devin Farsi, Alamo Drafthouse CEO Tim League, and several alleged victims who wanted their voices to be heard. This is a story we covered, God, it seems like at least a year ago, but it's
come back. Yeah, it was about April 2016.
Yeah, but it's come back to the news because Devin Farsi, who was a movie blogger at Birth Movies Death, he was accused of sexual assault, and if you remember, he didn't defend himself. Mm-hmm. He didn't say, I did do it, and he didn't say I didn't do it, when he was accused by a Twitter user who said, quote, quick question, do you remember grabbing me by the pussy and bragging to our friends about it, telling them to smell your fingers? Farsi replied in a tweet, I do not remember this, I can only believe you, and beg forgiveness for having been so vile. So, there is that.
So weird.
But recently...
just so fucking weird.
Isn't that the most bizarre statement you've pretty much ever heard from another human being? I do not remember this. I can only believe you and beg forgiveness for having been so vile.
Oh. Ladies and gentlemen, the beta male.
That is literally, I mean, other than the fact that he committed this sexual assault, that is literally what the left wants men to be right there. So, anyway, he's back in the news because Birth Movies Death secretly rehired him recently, unbeknownst
to... Well, Alamo did, not Birth Movies Death.
Oh, I'm
but
sorry.
Alamo owns Birth Movies Death.
That's where I was confused. Sorry about that. Alamo recently rehired him, unbeknownst to most... folks, and unbeknownst certainly to his alleged victims, and that has led to a bit of a dust-up here, and this whole article sort of expose on Farsi's bad behavior throughout the years. Apparently he used to get drunk at a lot of these events and be very dickish, not just to women, but to basically everyone in the film industry. Justin, anything in particular you want to pull out of this? I know Devin Farsi is maybe your second or third least favorite person on the planet. Just below Peyton Manning.
I don't know. I actually think I like Peyton Manning more than Devin Farsi. He at least contributed positively to society in some way.
My God.
Like, he's got a good, decent psychology, and he's talented at something. Like, you
wow.
Can't really...
Broncos fans, mark the day. Justin said something positive about Peyton Manning.
Well,
other than
you're comparing him to, like, scum on Earth. Like, it's kind of easy. Like,
no, so I mean, what is it that you want to talk about with Devin Farsi here?
Here's the thing about this whole thing. There's two things. If you remember a couple episodes ago, or maybe a couple months ago, I don't remember, where there was the article by the AV Club about how 300 was the presage of the alt-right howling fascism.
Yes.
All right. I went on that rant talking about their kind of character.
Yeah.
And saying, you know, they're only reacting like this because they can't handle the truth in a movie like 300.
Yeah.
Well, to me, and you know, maybe I'm doing a false induction here, James, so tell me if my scientific method is wrong. Okay. But I think Devin Farsi is a perfect example of a person who isn't healthy enough to like good art and to properly comment on art. That it's clear he does not like Snyder's work because of how much of a scumbag he is and how disconnected he is from reality. I mean, to continue to not fix yourself and put yourself in the public eye when you go through this shit, that shows layers of evasion, which leads into the second thing here. People like Farsi are only enabled or only put in the public eye and only empowered is the word, is when someone like Tim League in the Alamo Drafthouse enables him. He would not be anywhere without Tim League continuing to back him up. Why they decided to give him a job a few months after he resigned is ridiculous. It just shows how bad they are and how biased they are and what's wrong with them. So this just shows how deep the cultural issues are. It's whole groups of people that are the problem. When you see one person propped up like that doing this in the public eye, there are a whole bunch of people that are raising him up to get him to that point. For it to be okay. And then the other thing I want to say, to be slightly critical of the accusations against him. He does say that, you know, he probably committed sexual assault because he was so drunk so often and he didn't know what he did. But if you read the story, the article that that's linked to on themidside.com for this episode, the one that they go into in detail is actually not a sexual assault. She's just complaining that it's a really bad pickup attempt. So I, at the same time, I don't think that's fair either.
Because he just kisses her, right? And then says, like, no, I don't want this, and then it stopped.
Right, and he very poorly tried to hit on her.
Right, and that's one of those really dangerous things where it's like, yeah, if you just come on to a woman in a way that isn't effective or she just doesn't like you and therefore she says no, like, the fact that you even attempted is now some sort of assault, basically.
Right, and the only reason I'm standing up for that point is because that's something I dealt with when I was young, is I saw it at Ithaca. It was, if a girl didn't like you, she could just call you creepy for just simply saying you found her attractive. And that's fucked up. That's not respectful of men and not respectful of reality. It's not an assault on you. Women literally take it that way. Some, not all. I want to be very clear. Insecure women who have psychological issues take it that way. Well, what's wrong with me that guy would find me attractive? If that guy's so unattractive and he finds me attractive, I must be unattractive. It's a very second-handed way of looking at things. So I want to be clear, not every accusation against Farsi is correct, but the fact that he's not defending himself and the fact that he's saying he probably did commit sexual assault means he did, and the fact that people are defending him at all and continuing to even hire him shows how fucked up all of these people are. And these are people that are movie bloggers that people are taking seriously and have a huge following. And Alamo Drafthouse, don't forget, these are the people that did the female-only Wonder Woman screenings. So these are culturally significant cinemas and culturally significant online publications. And look at the character of the people who are running these things.
Yeah. I have a mass psychologization question, Justin, that may make you giddy.
I'm already, you just like instant boner right now.
Yeah. Which is, should we just assume now, based on all the preponderance of the evidence, that every virtue signaler is just a giant projector in terms of their own psychology? We have Farsi with the feminism. We have Whedon with the feminism. And then going back, I mean, not the conservatives also doing the virtue signaling stuff. Like, how many senators who railed against the sins of homosexuality were found in an airport trying to suck a cock? Like,
okay, I'm a bit confused by your question because I already do this. And the reason I do this is...
Sucking dudes' cocks?
Oh.
Okay, way to use the concrete. That was a very low-hanging fruit with that joke.
Yeah, that's totally what she said. Yeah.
Fruit right there. I'm so, like, dumbfounded.
One more gay dude on the midside.
The joke was just so low-hanging, and I'm just so dumbfounded by it.
But no, I'm sorry. Go on. This is important.
Yeah, it's okay. It's okay. No, I already do this. The reason I'm saying, like, I'm confused by this is I already do this. Like, you don't need to talk about it if it's not something that bothers you all the time. Like, if...
Yes.
Like, if you really... Like, there are things I think are... Like, let me give an example. I think murder is wrong, right? I think rape is wrong. I think murder and rape are wrong. But do I go around condemning murder and rape? Sorry. I know. Hardline says a hot take here in the Midside. Murder and rape are wrong. I think they're both wrong, but do I go around like making posts on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and Snapchat about how they're wrong?
Talk to your children about not murdering today.
Right, exactly. like, okay, the one thing we're going to, if we ever have kids, Christine, the one thing we have to teach him or her is not to murder, okay?
That's just right.
Don't super murder. Important.
If I did that, I would expect her to immediately break up with me. And I go, and if I said why, she'd go, because I think you're secretly Dexter.
Mm-hmm, right, yeah.
Like, if it doesn't affect you and it's not part of your daily life, why is it on your mind? And that's the thing. If somebody's constantly talking about something, that means it's on their mind. And you have to wonder, why is it on their mind? Well, the only possible thing could be projection. That's the only possible answer, is that's what they're thinking about, so they assume other people are thinking about it.
Yeah.
I think this is essentially right, but I would, in order to make it, I think here's what you're latching onto, and you have to make it a little wider, I think, to make the generalization completely true, is when someone engages in obviously wrong logic, like obviously, clearly wrong logic, it's because they're either, it means that somehow, some way, they're repressing or evading certain facts.
Yeah.
Which is usually a psychological issue, or at least will eventually become one.
I don't think that disagrees with anything I just said.
I'm making it more wide. It's not necessarily the particular thing you're talking about, although generally just like if you aren't willing to field the facts that the other side gives you ever, and you just simply ignore them, it means you're necessarily committing, which the left does all the time. It means you're psychologically evading on some level. And so you're going to get a lot of this very strange behavior where you have this huge rally about anti-rape, which happened at USC once. And I was just so flabbergasted by it. And a lot of times it'll be like, yeah, there's this sort of discomfort with sex that makes you obsess over something or some broader issue that you're not willing to name, that causes you to obsess over something in a way that doesn't make sense for your context.
Yeah. Look, I get it. You're making it wider.
Yeah.
I just happen to prefer it tighter. That's all.
Also, Devin Farsi looks like an Ayn Rand villain. I just want to put that out there.
Yeah.
I know, and it's really hard for me. That's the biggest problem I have as someone who thinks artistically, is I have a real problem like not just looking at people every day and being like, oh, he looks like Devin Farsi. He must be secretly a rapist.
Here's something that's sort of interesting, is we thought when we first like saw that really bizarre tweet that he put about like, I don't remember this, but maybe like I did it. We just chalked that up to him basically being so SJW that he's willing to throw himself under the bus and say like, well, you are a woman and you did make an accusation, so it must somehow be right, even though I don't recall any evidence about it. Maybe he's just saying that because he's such a drunk asshole, he literally can't remember if he did it.
No, that's what he says.
I didn't know he was such a drunkard, so I thought he was just being a complete epistemic subjectivist. He's like, well, you're a woman, and when women accuse someone of rape, they're always right, so I have to roll with what you just said. But he's just a drunk asshole, it turns out.
Well, right, and that's the funny thing about this whole thing, to sort of put a button on the story, and maybe, Daniel, if you want to respond to this real quick, but he's definitionally a neckbeard. But don't people call neckbeards, like, MRA people? Like, this is why these things are so, these labels are so confusing.
Worst pirate ever, neckbeard. sorry, I have nothing else. What could top that, Justin?
I could tell you what could top that. It's the movie we're going to review this week.
Oh, my dog.
It's time for The Hopeful Romantic with JML. Put me into syndication. Broadcast to a network station of people viewing their favorite episodes. I can't find a new pitch to throw the studio.
Written
wasn't focused on.
As you all know out there, all you midsiders, one of the things we do every episode is we do trailer takedown, where we hug or tackle trailers, and that tells us whether we want to see them or whether we think they're pieces of crap and we'll never see them. But just because we're hug or tackling trailers, hugging or tackling trailers, doesn't mean that we are always correct. And I'm going to, this episode, tell you that I was incorrect in my assessment of a trailer. I will also go back and critique that trailer to prove how the trailer was done incorrectly to lose me as an audience member. So I saw the new It on the weekend that it came out. Did either of you see this movie? Because if you remember, we all tackled it.
Yes, correct.
And I hugged it.
Still plan to tackle it.
I hugged it, yeah. I'm not a horror movie guy, but when I saw it, I'm like, yeah, this looks scary. I'd watch it if I liked horror movies.
But you haven't seen it?
No.
Okay. Well, I will say this. Okay, if you don't like horror movies, don't see it. And I don't think it was particularly scary, but it was very, very well done. What this movie ends up being is a movie about childhood trauma and the way it is used to control kids and kids overcoming that, basically. So the clown Pennywise is the embodiment of fear. It morphs into all these different things the kids fear to lure them in and then to eat them or to make them float. I don't know, it's a little unclear. They're going to do a sequel. Hopefully that is cleared up in the sequel. And it's not until they decide, you know, if we fight this together, we don't have anything to be afraid of. I really think this is a reference to We Have Nothing to Fear But Fear Itself. But that's basically the point of the movie. And this is embodied with the parents are abusers in this movie. The adults are abusers, and the kids are all afraid they're being abused, and then they have to face this evil, this supernatural evil, and then they have to decide what to do with it or not. Do they face it, or do they just, you know, let themselves be killed? Because then it will come back and feed again in, what, I don't know, 24 years? I don't remember the number of years. But it's very well done. It's very well shot. It's very well written. It's very well, the kids are very good. It's very well acted. Overall, I thought this movie was like an 8. I enjoyed it very much.
Interesting. That's pretty high praise from this guy over here.
Yeah, it's the more I think about it and the more I read about it, the more I like it. It's just a very well-done movie. And again, I didn't find it particularly scary. It's very tough for this. We talked about this last episode, wasn't it, about horror villains and, you know, what we find scary. It's not scary to me because it's supernatural. And, like, I know where the jump scares are coming. Like, there's one point where they're looking at him in the slides, and then in the next slide he disappears, and then I go, oh, he's in the room. And then he wasn't in the room, but it, like, comes out of the wall. The clown comes out of the wall, and everyone in the theater's like, oh, my God, holy shit. And I'm like, well, you knew they were going to, like, take a couple pauses and then have him pop out to scare you. So it's just I know the patterning too much of the horror for it to scare me, and it's too non-real for it to scare me. But seeing the kids coming from abusive households and just how relevant that is to today's society, I just thought it was very well done.
Still not going to see it.
Okay, well, I'm going to say something to try and convince you. I want to talk about the trailer for a second. So remember, what was our number one critique of the trailer, Daniel?
That they had green Legos when green Legos didn't come out for 20 years after the film was set.
Okay, what was our number one actual critique of the trailer, Daniel?
Was it the kid running into the thing and basically like a spoof comedy trailer at the beginning?
Okay, yes. And you know what? Having seen the movie, that was intentional. Okay, so that happens. That's at the beginning of the movie. He runs into that, and then his little paper boat floats into the sewer, and the clown's there, as you've seen in the trailer. And the clown talks to him until the clown lures him down, and then the clown eats him. And that there's a shift in that scene. But I was laughing hysterically throughout the scene, because the idea that there's this clown in the gutter talking to this child and being like, Georgie, do you like boats, Georgie? Do you want to float down here, Georgie? It's very funny, and the voice is funny, and that is intentional on the part of the director, and that's why he framed it with that at the beginning of the scene, that being the kid running into the barricade and falling down, because it's somber. The movie is very somber up until that point. So he wanted you to see that because it's a very stark turn when you see an image of a clown, which is supposed to be funny, and then it eats the kid. So that's very intentional. And it was a very poor mistake for the marketing people to put that in the trailer, although I do wonder if they were limited by the amount of material they had to put in the trailer. But yeah, right. I was laughing hysterically, and I was the only one. But having reflected on it and talked to people who were fans of the original miniseries and the book, it's definitely intentional on the director's part.
Hey, Justin, guess what?
What?
Still not going to see it.
Ah, not even if it's on Netflix?
I don't like Stephen King generally, and I don't like horror generally.
Okay, I'm going to push back on you. Shawshank Redemption is the greatest movie that's ever been made.
Was it horror?
It's still okay. Stephen King.
I know, but I said I don't generally like Stephen King, and I don't generally like horror. So when you have Stephen King horror, I'm out. I also but love Stephen King's... But no, he wrote another book called The Eyes of the Dragon, which is a phenomenal book. It's a fantasy book. Great book. He wrote a short story called The Walk, which is just a psychological thriller. Or The Long Walk, sorry. Phenomenal. One of the best short stories ever written. But his horror writing, to me, is trite, and I hate it.
Okay, well, I think you're just looking right now to talk shit about things and movies you don't want to see, right?
Are you accusing me of not giving you my honest evaluation?
No, I'm just trying to give it
of good just, pod?
I'm just trying to give a transition into Trailer Takedown.
Okay. Here we go.
Trailer Takedown. First trailer.
Tragedy Girls is about two girls who are not social media famous, so they become social media famous by becoming serial killers who kill all the other social media famous kids at their high school, and then they have an account, which nobody knows is connected, obviously, to the serial that follows the serial killings. So they're running the account that follows the serial killings while they're also the serial killers themselves, but nobody knows there's a serial killers. Now, to be clear, this is a comedy. I think it's meant to be a comedy. I think it's meant to be funny. That's like how it came across to me.
Yeah, dark comedy.
Well, if you're, I'd love to see a light comedy about a serial killer. Can we make that happen?
I think you could.
Didn't they do that with Timothy Elephant on Netflix or something? And he's like making awkward smiles while she eats people or something.
Oh, the zombie one? The Santa Cruz diet?
Yeah. It's zombie. I thought it was like she was a cannibal or something. So.
Well, zombies are technically cannibal if they're sentient, right?
It was the Santa Clarita diet.
Oh, sorry. Whatever. One of those fucking Mexican California cities.
Exactly.
All right, as far as this movie goes, on one hand, I sort of like where they're trying to reach forward with the premise. Like, I like the idea of making fun of this need to be social media famous. And I like the whole mixing it with, like, a Scream type approach to it.
Yes.
With the whole serial killing. But on the other hand, the premise is just so ridiculous to me that I can't, like, get behind it. Like, there are that many social media famous people in one high school. So I have to tackle this.
I mean, when you talk about social media famous, I mean, the guy who's like the pinnacle of fame here has 15,000 followers. Like, I think that's believable in a small town setting. Like, that didn't throw me at all. In fact, wouldn't I be an enormous hypocrite if I didn't want to watch this movie after last week saying both I wanted a horror movie more in the vein of Scream and also a movie that did a better portrayal of what social media actually is? Unlike that stupid horror movie last time, whatever it was.
Yeah.
You're talking about Friend Request.
There you go, that stupid piece of shit. Yeah.
Right. So what you're saying is it's like they heard our last episode and in a week produced a major motion picture about it.
I like to feel like we have that power, so I'm going to say that that's exactly what happened. And none of you can prove it wrong. So I have to hug this. I sort of have to hug it out of pure, unadulterated, not being a hypocrite obligation.
Hug.
James?
I see what you guys are saying when you have less than complete contempt for this, but I have complete contempt for this. This came off, I don't know, this came off to me somehow as like a condoning of what they were doing. I don't know how, but that's how it came off to me. Am I wrong to interpret it that way?
I think when it was revealed that they were lesbians, then that's when it all kicked in. No, I'm just kidding. I don't know. I mean, but that's sort of how dark comedies work, which is you're supposed to have a tiny bit of sympathy for the main characters, even though they're doing bad things. that's really the only way it can work. Otherwise, it just becomes straight up horror.
Well, that's you said an article in the thread that I haven't read yet, Daniel. Why our obsession with anti-heroes on television is destroying us. Is that what it's called?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so that's similar to what you're talking about here and what James is talking about.
It the beats of this particular... Yeah, that is what I'm talking about, but it goes even further than that. It's something as... Nice. It's something about the... What's it called? It's something about the beats of this particular trailer that really distinguishes it from a movie, say, like, you know, Arsenic and Old Lace, where, like, yeah, it has all of those dark comedy aspects that you're talking about, but I don't get the sense that, like, somehow what they're doing is, like, a good thing. Like, it somehow feels to me like when they kill Dave Franco, they kill Dave Franco at the beginning, right? That's Dave Franco.
Is it?
That is not Dave Franco. You take
okay,
that back.
Okay, I'm retarded. So they kill a handsome young man in the beginning of the trailer.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
I got the sense that somehow as an audience we are supposed to feel as though that is justified.
Oh, because that's he was bragging about his 15,000 followers?
Yeah. And that he has, like, a standard on which he selects people to associate with because he is a media personality and, like, says, like, oh, well, I really only associate with certain people that will boost my own reputation, blah, blah, blah. I'm running a business here, in other words, what he's saying.
Yo, that's PETA from The Hunger Games, Joss Hutcherson. Right?
Okay, right. I thought I'd seen that guy before. Okay, yeah, I apologize for getting that mixed up. I truly do.
Do not insult James Franco, Dave Franco, as if he would... I just call him James Franco, what I'm saying, not to insult him. Dave Franco, as if he would do a movie with Jennifer Lawrence.
Right.
Jennifer Lawrence?
Yeah, with The Hunger Game.
She's man, Katniss. You did like a reverse weird logic there. Okay.
Yeah, you like all Justin logic? Yeah, welcome to the Midside.
Okay. I don't know. I don't want to spend too much time on this because it's just a feeling that I have is that it's being what they're doing is being condoned by the context of the story.
Okay,
I don't know. Maybe I'm alone in feeling that.
Before you hug or tackle then, I'm going to challenge you.
Okay.
This might be a movie that's worth hugging for you to see what it's about and why you're having that feeling.
Yeah, I guess so. Hug and only in that way. Otherwise, tackle all the way, because I was disgusted by this.
Tackle!
But hug to see what happens.
Second trailer.
Red Sparrow is the latest Jennifer Lawrence vehicle picture, and it's about her as a Russian-trained spy. And honestly, to me, this played like they were like, let's make a Black Widow movie, but we can't call it Black Widow. What sounds like a widow? Oh, a sparrow. Done and done. Tackle.
Tackle.
What is happening to Jennifer Lawrence? She is far too young to have this I'm going insane phase of her life. Like, I understand with Jim Carrey. I get it. Okay? Jim Carrey can yell at as many clouds as he wants. Jennifer Lawrence literally said the other week that Mother Nature was punishing us for electing Trump by sending these hurricanes to the United States. She wasn't joking. Like, her selection of roles lately is also just ridiculously retarded. This movie looks terrible. Tackle. Hard tackle. Ridiculously difficult. Hard tackle.
Tackle.
What I'll say to you is, wasn't there that South Park episode about how we always have the young females that we raise up and then that they're like our sacrifice? Remember they did it about Britney Spears?
I kind of remember that, but I don't. Maybe you're just putting that memory into my head now, incepting it, but I don't know.
Yeah, isn't that what's going on with Jennifer Lawrence? And in a way, isn't she just behind the curve with Miley Cyrus?
Yeah, a little bit. The problem for me there is that she seems genuinely talented. And I've seen her do things that are good. I just... lately, she's gone off the rails. I don't know what's going on.
James?
This was a poorly made trailer, is the first thing I'll say. It's because, like, I... Like, this is... I felt, by the end of it, I felt like, I don't know what is going on, but the general premise is something I may watch, just because it's sort of, it's a pretty, I don't know, I feel like it's a very staple premise. Like, I think you could make a movie about it. It wouldn't be the best movie ever, but, like, it's very staple. Like, this could be a McDonald's hamburger of a movie and still be pretty good. But, like, the trailer gave me no real information about it, other than its sort of tone, which is very dark and, like, and sort of, what's the word, like, you know, foreboding in a sultry kind of way, but, like, still just, like, but I didn't know what the fuck was gonna happen in the movie, so I don't know. I have to learn more to know what I think about this. But as of now, Tackle. It looks like it's gonna be, like, as though J.J. Abrams wrote it, and it'll just be everything is happening all at once, and Thor shows up and starts screaming in a cave.
How dare you insult the great J.J. Abrams by tying him to this crap? Fisticuffs, sir.
Hold on to the J.J. Abrams thought, although I'm a little confused because he had nothing to do with Avengers and Age of
No,
Ultron.
I know, but it's the same kind of writing that I really hate, where basically I just feel insulted by the way that a lot of movies are written now, where, like, nothing has to connect to anything else, and it's just, like, a torrent of shit assaulting my eyes in no particular order.
Can I make a t-shirt of that? A torrent of shit assaulting my eyes.
James on all modern movies.
Like, most of them, though. Like, I just feel like they're treating me like I'm a retarded child, and I don't, and, like, I'm not gonna notice when, you know, like, entire plot points don't connect to other ones,
right,
or
and
characters
let's be fair,
act for no purpose.
You're an autistic child.
I really want to put up a file on BitTorrent called Shit Assaulting My Eyes so I can download a torrent of shit assaulting my eyes.
Third trailer.
The Foreigner is the latest Jackie Chan vehicle picture. In this trailer, Jackie Chan is a Chinese immigrant, I think, to England, because Pierce Brosnan, so it must be English. And his family is killed, specifically his daughter is killed in a car bomb, but they're all killed, and he wants to find out why they were killed so he can kill them, the people who killed his family. Okay, I want to like this because I feel like it's taken with Jackie Chan. But, like, some of the dialogue was really bad, and I forgot that Jackie Chan can't act, and they're, like, trying to make him act serious in this.
Yeah.
So, Tackle.
Tackle.
Okay, so my wife is going to see this about 300 times, which means that of those 300 times, I should probably see it once. So there's that. Two, this is not just Jackie Chan is Taken. This is Jackie Chan is Taken plus John Wick, which is, like, the perfect Jackie Chan vehicle. I'm totally in a super hug.
Hug.
James.
Looks good. Lots of firearms. I like Jackie. I like Jack. There's something about Jackie Chan's face where you just want to like him. You want what's best for him. I don't even care that he can't act. I just want to say, you know, you go, keep doing what you're doing, man.
That sounds vaguely racist.
And he's
buy him a beer.
And he's an,
like,
action
positive
star named
racism.
Jackie. It's awesome. Plus, Jackie Chan jumping out of a corner from the ceiling above the refrigerator. Come on.
Awesome. I thought that was pretty cool. Like, he's a fucking bat out of hell. I don't
okay,
care
I
if it
be
makes
clear
no
with
sense.
Everything you guys are saying, if this movie was made in the 80s, I would tackle I would hug the fuck out of it. Like, this would be, like, the best 80s movie ever. But I don't have faith that modern filmmakers can make an 80s movie today, an 80s action movie.
Ooh.
Interesting.
That's a very good argument.
You're welcome.
Still
that's hard. A very, I mean, I feel like you could do an entire show on the premises implicit in what you just said.
We do, James. It's called Welcome to the Midside.
Yeah. Like, well, it's like, yeah, the aesthetics portion kind of is that. But, like, yeah, it's just very, very real to me when you say it that way.
Hey, James, yeah. Welcome to the Midside.
That's right. All right, moving on.
Final trailer.
The Commuter stars Liam Neeson and Vera Farmiga. If you remember, she plays Norma Bates in Bates Motel.
And otherwise known as the slightly better looking Kristen Wiig.
That's more than slightly better looking. Kristen Wiig's hard to look at.
Yeah. Comparatively, not that different. But okay, moving on.
You just made me like, I thought she was kind of cute for an older woman. Now I feel kind of bad.
She's like the evolved Pokemon version of Kristen Wiig. Like she's the second evolution. Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'll accept that. Okay. So in this movie, Liam Neeson is a family man who has been commuting on this commuter rail for a decade. And when he sits down one day, because you're making fun of it. Okay. Interesting. When he sits down one day, Norma Bates is sitting with him, and I always say that because I can't say her name. And she challenges him, and she says, like, I'm a social humanities, social scientist, and this is my study. I'm going to see what kind of people are by asking them one question. And she basically says, if you find one person who's not supposed to be on this train, and it's implied kill him, it doesn't really say, the trailer cuts around it, you will get the $75,000 that is in the bathroom. And then the trailer cuts forward to, like, the police and everything are involved. He's like, you set me up and blah, blah, blah. So I am actually going to take a stance you would not expect on this movie. Based upon the people who are in the movie, and I like that they're trying to be creative with the premise, and I always like these things where it's like, hey, this one person is fucking with you and you don't know why, and we got to figure out why they're fucking with you. I am hugging this.
Hug.
I don't. You know, I'm not going to make fun of you for hugging this movie. There are other things I could make fun of you for, but not for hugging this movie. No, the reason I'm laughing at the whole setup is it sort of reminds me of, like, The Accountant with Ben Affleck, which apparently was not a bad movie from the various people I've heard.
Enjoyed it. There were problems with the end, but it was a pretty entertaining movie.
But, like, the trailer and the marketing team spends, like, 33% of the trailer setting up, like, in The Accountant, that he's a fucking accountant. Which is ultimately not that important to anything that goes on in the movie. And just, like, watching this where it's like, oh, goodbye, honey, see you later, I'm commuting on my train now. And then they have this whole conversation about how he's a commuter. Who gives a flying fuck that he's a commuter? I don't need that much setup to figure out why he's on a train.
Well, to be fair, it's called The Commuter.
Well, that's my point. Like,
otherwise, we wouldn't make that connection.
Like, I don't need that connection. Just call it, like, you know, guy on a train kills people. I'm in.
They tried that with Snakes on a Plane. It didn't do so well.
Maybe they did that and they successfully generated this effect for me. Maybe they did that because it's sort of, they're trying to emphasize that he's a normal guy who's been thrust suddenly into an abnormal situation in his everyday life, which makes it interesting in the way that Justin described.
That, James, is a better title than The Commuter. I would take normal guy thrust into an unusual situation over The Commuter.
But by the way, Daniel, to sort of back you up on that, did you also notice in the trailer they were like, from the director of The Shallows? And I'm like, is that really something to brag about? And also, does this guy just love naming movies The something?
I just, like, you have this badass action movie, either whether it's The Accountant or The Commuter, and it's interesting premises, you know, all by all counts going to be good, and then I just can't do it. I won't support it, Justin. I won't support the marketing agencies and their stupid fucking decisions about the names of these films. Not marketing agencies, marketing departments at these
I mean,
studios.
To be fair, can you have, like, a more generically titled thing than It?
No. But that was, at the time, groundbreaking.
I know.
Now we're in a time where, if you name it The Commuter, I'm just going to point and laugh at you. Also, I don't know. This premise didn't really do it for me. It seems like a new movie, so I might, you know, hit it up on Netflix because it's not a remake of something. So I do want to support that in some way, but otherwise, tackle.
And just to push you a little bit, I think we should try and get Norma Bates a career. Like, let's all go see the movie she's in because she's a very good actress.
Yes. Let's all support hot Kristen Wiig.
James?
I agree with a lot of the things you guys said, but, like, I too like what you said, Justin, where the plot is someone's fucking with you and there's this mystery to get down to what it all means. But this just looked like it wouldn't be executed that well. So tackle, basically, tackle. Despite the firearm that appears, you know, 75% of the way into the trailer.
You know, if there's a firearm in Liam Neeson, he's going to shoot a bunch of fucking people. You know that, right?
Yeah, right, but they only showed one firearm the entire time that I could remember. It was a SIG P226.
Have you seen Taken? He doesn't need more than one firearm.
Or right. one bullet. He keeps reusing
right,
the same bullet.
Right, but the bad guys have firearms. I don't know. If they do, that's better, because there's more than one firearm in the film.
All right, let's move on here. I want to just to sum up the art segment really quickly here. I want to ask you, Daniel, for your thoughts on this, because I really like, I think it's good. I don't have a problem with it. I just wonder why this wasn't done for the entire trilogy, why we had to stick this other director right in the middle of the trilogy. But it released, or it came out this week that J.J. Abrams is going to be directing episode 9, which is the final act in the second or the third Star Wars trilogy, right? I mean, I guess the prequels are a trilogy as well, but we don't really count that one.
The prequels.
Right. But the new Star Wars trilogy is going to end with J.J. Abrams writing and directing episode 9. He, of course, wrote and directed The Force Awakens, correct? Yes. He wrote it as well?
Correct. He did write it.
Right.
And he'll be the first person other than George Lucas to direct two Star Wars films.
Right, and I mean, that was sort of what he's always wanted to do with his career. Now, originally, it was going to be the guy who did Jurassic World who was going to do the episode 9, correct?
Yes, and he dropped out for unknown reasons.
Okay, well, I think this is a good thing. J.J. Abrams, as I've said before, this is what his entire life is about. I think he did wonderful with The Force Awakens. It's his story, it's his baby. Hopefully, he was still heavily involved and he doesn't have to, like, fix things Rian Johnson did. Is that his name?
Rian or Rian. Yeah. One of those.
The guy who did episode 8.
Yeah, I'm not saying that's two different people, Justin. I'm saying I don't know how to pronounce R-I-A-N, whether it's Rian or Rian, but yes.
Oh, okay. I always say it Rian. Okay. I was very confused. I was like, that's not his last name, Arian. Okay. Yeah, so what do you think? Is this a good thing for Star Wars, or is this a bad thing for Star Wars?
I am one of these people who will not get on the J.J. Abrams hate train. I can't find something that J.J. Abrams has done that I thought is unequivocally shit. I can see that's why some people wouldn't like it, I can understand that intellectually, but I think objectively what he does is really good. I think this is going to be his magnum opus, to use a little bit of the prediction stuff that we don't like to use on Belichick Your Premises. I think he's going to put everything he has into this, and he has a bunch of time to do it, and it's going to be fucking phenomenal. I thought he did an excellent job rebooting the series, which is... I cannot try to explain this to someone who isn't Star Wars obsessed how huge of a task that is to make a Star Wars movie that gets new people interested and keeps a good percentage of the old people interested as well. That's fucking ridiculously almost impossible, and he basically knocks it out of the park. So I'm excited. I think this is ultimately an excellent thing, and I'm already buying my tickets. I'm going to buy them now if I could. I can't. So it's metaphorical, but I would if I could.
Yeah, I like most of what J.J. Abrams does, and I might argue that The Force Awakens is his best work so far. So it would be interesting to see what happens. The big problem with him is the mystery box, and he doesn't always pay that off properly, as we saw with Lost, although we can blame that on Damon Lindelof. And here the mystery box of this new trilogy is Rey's parents and her connection to the Force, correct?
Yes. Yes.
So hopefully we have some sort of good payoff to that. That is the main concern, is where this is all going to go. To me, you've got me convinced the only payoff can be the Grey Jedi.
Yeah. I think that's where it's going. So we'll see.
All right. The Grey Jedi?
Mm-hmm. Go back and listen to old episodes, you bitch.
The Grey Jedi, James, I can't resist explaining.
Oh.
Our canon, and they're a group of Jedi who were neither light side nor dark side. They used elements of both, and that was their argument for what the only way you could actually keep balance in the Force.
Ah, that's interesting.
And the trailer for the new movie sort of alludes that that's where they're going.
Oh,
including
there's
showing,
so much more.
Including showing a symbol that is related to the Grey Jedi. And Luke basically saying, like, the only way to save the Force is to let the Jedi die, or something like that, in his best Liam Neeson voice.
Well, the only way to save this episode is to let this segment die.
I love Star
Wars. Let's move on to Reddit on Reddit. These things are all on Reddit. Must be
mostly pics of felines, comma, boring felines. These things are all on Reddit. No, we didn't host it, but we will repost it.
First Reddit, this is relevant to the movie review this week. What would Pennywise have to say to get you into the sewer? They're, of course, referring to the clown luring Georgie down into the sewer to eat him.
All the Chase variants. All of them down here. All of the Chase variants.
I was
going to
say the same thing. How funny would it be if Pennywise was holding a Pennywise Chase variant?
That's really funny. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, James, these are the Cheribos.
No, I refuse to acknowledge that fucking term. That is the dumbest fucking term ever.
I think it's hysterical.
The only thing more annoying than that is Midsider Ronnie's fucking NHL gifts. Hockey gifts.
I think Cheribas is hilarious because it reminds me of cherubs, and they do kind of look a little cherub-esque. So, yeah. I like it.
I think that's why it stuck with me. My friend Jay-Z told me, like, oh yeah, doesn't Justin collect those Cheribo things?
Oh,
I'm like, what?
No.
And I'm like... like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, you know, with the big heads. I'm like, oh, yeah, those Cheribos. And I've been calling them Cheribos ever since.
Wait. Does really he listen funny. To the show?
Yeah, at times. And then I think he saw a video with your Cheribos in the background.
Oh, okay, yeah, like the live episode. Okay, I was wondering why people knew that I collected them, but all right.
Yeah.
Sometimes I forget, like, people listen to the show.
These are the Funko Pops. We never have actually said the name thus far. Funko Pop Finals. Yes, Cheribos. Okay.
Right, and the Chase variants are really rare of the Funko Pops, and there's a really rare one of Pennywise from It, which got made and then canceled halfway through production, so it's super rare. And then somebody in the community made a joke post of a pop holding a variant pop, a Chase variant holding the limited edition, very rare Pennywise Chase. And they were like, this is a super extra rare Chase, because that's how absurd it's gotten with these things.
Yeah, it is getting kind of bit crazy. Also, he could get me down there if he said taxation is theft.
Yeah. Good lead into the next one. For me, he could just be like, so I got a lot of, like, Filipino women down here.
That's true. Asians. All the Asians.
All the Asians are down here, and I'd be like, I gotta check this out, guys. Just gonna see what's going on here.
Swipe right.
James? He would say, like, we have all of the original works of Aristotle down here. And then I would just say, but then that probably wouldn't get me down there, because I'd be just like, why are you a fucking clown in the sewer? And why do you have the original works of Aristotle down there? And why have you been hiding them from us for all these millennium?
So nerdy.
All right. Next Reddit. So let me give you a little preamble for this really quickly. I always, you know, I go on Reddit and I read different stuff, and I go to the front page and I just see stuff that I think would be interesting to talk about. And I wanted to include this one, and I'm going to read it, and then I'm going to read one of the comments that was a reply to it. And the reason I'm including it is I don't understand it at all. Like, it's that foreign to me. So I just wanted you guys to talk about it to see what you could say. Because, like, I just read this and I go, what? This makes zero sense to me. So, next Reddit. This is from, just to give you an idea, the subreddit Socialism. If, like libertarians say, taxation is theft, then capitalist extraction of surplus value is grand larceny. Okay, just side note, this is the point where I'm out. Like, I don't, what does any of that mean? But I never hear those boot-licking motherfuckers talk about that. So they've insinuated that capitalists are fascist when saying boot-licking. So, like, I just don't...
Yeah.
Well, they say capitalist. Oh, well, libertarians, capitalists. Okay, all of that, yes.
Yeah.
And then this is one of the replies. Taxation is what is taken from the individual by the community. Property is what is taken from the community by the individual. Property is the real theft. And that really confuses me, because isn't it very obvious based on reality that property is an individual concept? Like, you can't have something owned by multiple people.
Well, that concept defeats itself.
Or at least, I don't want to say multiple people, right? Because two people, like, if you and your wife own something, you can own something, right? But, like, there's a point, there's a threshold where too many people own it, so it's not owned anymore, right? Or, like, the idea that everyone owns it. Like, the Green Bay Packers, everyone, like, they're a bunch of owners, right? But they each own an individual piece of it. and there's like a concrete in reality that represents their ownership. So I just don't like get how property cannot be an individual concept.
Well, I forget James, maybe you someone like literally points out like that property at some point becomes a matter of physics, where like you cannot have X number of people on a piece of property at so much time, so you can't say that everyone owns this thing because it would be impossible. If you can't actually enact the ownership, if you can't actually get something out of the ownership of that property, you can't say that you own it. How could you say that you own it? Like, in what sense do you own it? It would be nonsensical.
I've never heard that, but that's not the way I conceptualize it, though I'm not saying that's a wrong way to necessarily. I've just never heard of it that way.
Right, just say how you conceptualize it.
I conceptualize it as that pretty much exactly the Lockean sense, where if the physical matter, if the form of a certain piece of physical matter is a result of your labor, then there's a sense in which it is you, and so you have a right to it. So, like, if you turn a barren patch of land into a farm, the fact that the land has a certain form is because of your labor. Therefore, you now own the patch of land, because its value as a piece of land is the product of you. It is you in a certain, I don't know about a physical sense, but in some kind of sense. I'm not sure what sense you would call that, but not in a physics. I don't really personally think of it as a matter of physics, but I'm not saying, but maybe you can think of it that way.
Yeah. And I think that's the not problem that this, I cannot remember this guy's name. That's not, he didn't see that as a problem. He saw it as a further explanation of why you can't have community ownership of anything. It's basically, you're not referring to anything when you say like the community owns this thing.
Whatever. Yeah, because you can that sounds like almost just a reductio. It's just like, okay, well, if everyone really did own it, then everyone would have a right to it at the same time, and that's impossible. So
yes.
It's just not an he shows that there's this way in which it's not logically implementable. And of course, you know, property is theft. Like, you can't have the concept of theft without the concept of property. So there's an obvious little mistakey poo there.
So, but James, how would you answer this criticism that, okay, taxation may be theft, but a capitalist extracting surplus value, basically giving you a wage, but that wage not being the total value created for the company, is quote-unquote grand larceny? If someone said that to you, like, yeah, sir, taxes take a small percentage, but what's really taking a bigger percentage is a company who's not paying you 100% of the value you create.
Wait, right. So that's what they're saying? So, like,
yeah.
If I am on the assembly line of the iPhone, so I create 5% of the iPhone, I should get 5% of what the iPhone is sold for on the market? Is that what they're saying?
Basically, yes. I mean, basically, you should get whatever value you create, you should get compensation of that exact value, not your whatever your wages that you agreed upon.
Right. I mean, that entire premise is just, this is the reason this comment comes off as so stupid, is because it assumes this very complex and very wrong perspective of what property, of what value means. And it just assumes it and argues from that premise without arguing for the premise itself. And it's calling you an idiot for not holding their concept of what ownership entails. And basically their concept of ownership is that, you know, as Justin said, if you are on an assembly line and you are, you know, you're responsible for putting the screen onto the iPhone, and that screen constitutes a certain percentage of the iPhone's physical matter, then you are entitled to that percentage of the iPhone's, you know, gross. But that simply isn't the case, because it's not the iPod's physical constitution that gives it its value. It's all of its sort of, again, I'm not sure what level you'd say this, it's usage towards the promotion of human life which constitutes its value.
Right, I'm going to simplify this. Ready?
Yeah.
what you're talking about is abstract versus concrete. They're being very concrete bound. They're just seeing everything as a product that exists in physical reality. And even, I mean, that's Marxist labor theory, right? Everything is just physically the labor you do. It's not the added abstract value that's added in, which is necessarily how humans interact with the world.
Right. I mean, in the Marxian world, it is more important and it is more valuable that there is someone there to put the screen on than for someone to come up with the idea of the iPhone in the first place. Because having the idea for the iPhone isn't actual labor. You're not actually creating anything when you come up with the idea for the iPhone. The only time you create value is when you physically move one thing and put it onto another, or glue it, or whatever. And so, in their mind, like Steve Jobs, is less valuable than the Foxconn workers who assemble the iPhone. Because they do the labor. And he is just the capitalist who extracts the value of their labor. And basically to them, if there were no people putting the iPhones together, there would be no iPhones. But it's, I don't think Ayn Rand is the first person to point this out, or maybe she was, but it's like the pyramid, the value pyramid is inverted there. Because there's only one Steve Jobs. There's only one person who comes up with the idea of the iPhone, but there are literally probably, I don't know, tens of millions of people who could glue on a screen to the front of an iPhone.
Yeah.
So it's not, you are not required in this equation, person who glues on the screen, although I don't mean to say that you're invaluable, you do provide a service, but it is only worth such a small percentage of what the iPhone is worth because there are many people who can do it, when there are not many people who can invent the iPhone.
Right, and that's the thing to think about is life is mind and body, so obviously the creation of a product would be mind and body as well. Marxism, socialism, this comment is looking at it purely from a physical body perspective. And those people doing the labor, there's many, many, many of them that are providing that. And as you say, Daniel, not only are there many of them, but most of them, I don't want to give a percentage because I don't know, but most of them are replaceable. Whereas the people who the abstract is spread out across aren't as replaceable. And, you know, many of them are replaceable as well. Again, I don't know what percentage, but definitely the guy at the top isn't replaceable, and
or
that's
rarely
why
replaceable, or it's very difficult to replace, or any number of things. But
right,
yes.
And just like why, you know, on the physical side, there are people who are harder to replace as well, the foreman and the managers and things like that. So it goes both ways, but it just seems like, yeah, that's interesting. I had never thought about it that way before, but they're very bound to concrete reality, and that's it.
Yeah.
And this, it makes me wonder whenever someone said, I've heard even libertarians like Anthony Comenga, I think, wait, I'm remembering his name wrong. So do not go find Anthony Comenga and yell at him because of this, because I think I gave you the wrong name. But a lot of even libertarians hold this view that they say like, oh, we're against the great man theory of history. Really, it's about society as a whole. Like, whenever someone says stuff like that, I just think like, well, that just tells me that you've never achieved anything in your life, basically. Not even like on a small scale, like, because I don't know, like when I the stuff that I've, you know, made or attempted to make in my life, like I can't see anyone other than me making it. And Justin, I mean, I'm sure you would feel the same way about the scripts you've written. It's just that, you know, bad or good, no one else could have written that script. You know, bad or good, no one else could have come up with the ideas I'm coming up with. And like, it's obvious to me that that's the case. And so it's just like, well, some of these people come up with ideas that are extremely important, and only they could have done it.
Well, now what you're doing, I don't disagree with you at all. I agree with you. But now what you're doing is you're reducing it to psychology, and you're reducing it to their base philosophical principles about the nature of man and the nature of the universe, and psychologically their nature of themselves. Like, this is why I think a lot of it comes back to self-esteem always, is now what you've just expressed self-esteem, right? It takes self-esteem to say, I'm the only one who could have come up with it, right? Like, this show we're doing, only the three of us could have made this show as it is.
Right.
And it only could have been created if I created it in the way I created it, because I'm the driving force behind it. That takes self-esteem for me to say, and self-esteem for you guys to acknowledge. But that self-esteem is ultimately, there's an abstract element to that. So they're very physically bound because they only see themselves as just physical creatures. Their mind is not adding anything to it. So
one
to me,
more cog.
Right, a cog, right? And to me, ultimately, that's a self-esteem issue. Maybe, Daniel, that's too mass psychologizing for you, but that's the point I've arrived at in my life, where I think it's all, you can ultimately see it's all self-esteem.
I actually don't disagree with you in this regard. I think
leftism
in general, to understand that that's sort of the root, envy is sort of the root cause of a lot of it. So
I would almost put it this way to broaden the perspective again, well, here's my yes and. Maybe
this is how Pennywise got me in the sewer. I like it tighter.
So wow. So very, very specific. So what are we talking about? I forgot.
Broadening.
Oh,
leftism.
You know, okay. I don't even know if it's a matter of actual literal self-esteem, because one could imagine someone with self-esteem problems being on the correct side of these general issues, where someone says, like, you know, I'm not comfortable with myself yet. I don't really think I'm that great, but one day I want to be. And that means I have to look at, you know, Superman and say, maybe one day I am intimidated by him, but maybe one day I won't be. Maybe one day, like, I can look at that and say, like, I can strive towards that. So it's more of like, it's the embrace of the good versus the rejection of it. If you have low self-esteem, you may still be in this good category, because you're still embracing the ideas required to one day gain the self-esteem. Or you can give up and say, having shitty self-esteem is just the way I'm always going to be, and I'm just going to accept it, basically. Yeah.
Okay, James, I get where you're coming from, but I'm going to tell you something, and this is you can take it as a compliment because it's sort of intended that way. I don't think you can conceptualize how low of self-esteem these people actually have, because you're talking from a personal perspective. And I'll talk from that same personal perspective. I have had self-esteem issues in my life, things I'm still dealing with. And even at my lowest amount of self-esteem, I still had more self-esteem than most people. And that tells you sort of where we're at as a society and where these people are at. So it's sort of the Dunning-Kruger effect, Daniel, that Dr. Drew always talks about?
Yeah.
It's the Dunning-Kruger effect in relation to self-esteem, where, you know, you walk into a room and you assume everyone else has more intelligence than you do. I think you walk into a room, James, and you're saying, wow, everyone else has more self-esteem than I do. No, I think it's actually, you don't realize how low people's self-esteem is, usually, the people you're around, and that you've had more than you've realized in your life. That's what I would say to that.
Because it takes a certain self-esteem to say, like,
I can be great one day.
I can be Superman. Yeah.
Right.
That is what the self-esteem is what you're saying. Yeah.
Correct. Correct.
Yeah.
All right.
Sweet.
Maybe that's what you guys learned out there this week. What did we all learn this trip? Daniel?
Man, I learned that the regulatory state even hates things that the left likes, like marijuana. But they're just like, you know what? You know what we like more than marijuana is fucking over businesses. So, there you go.
James?
Well, I mean, I just learned something about this Jan-Kruger effect and
Dunning-Kruger.
Oh, right.
The Freddy Krueger effect.
The Freddy Jan-Kruger effect.
Famous Viking.
Yeah, that's and just sort of trying to understand what self-esteem is. Like, it's like, is it a choice or is it a habit? Is it both? Just trying to wrap my head around that whole shebang.
Well, that's the other thing too. We say like it's the simple thing. Like no, like it's so
right. It
complicated.
Isn't. But so, yeah, like I'm getting that additional perspective that you just gave, and I'm just sort of spinning it around in my mind to get it to coalesce into a Patronus of knowledge.
Oh, you went with the Patronus reference. I was going to go with the Legend of Zelda reference. It's not like Link. Like you go into a dungeon and you find like the treasure in the dungeon, and in that dungeon you get self-esteem, and you open the treasure. And it goes doo doo doo. And all of a sudden you have self-esteem. Yeah, exactly. There it is. Da-na-na-na. And then you equip self-esteem. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
Yeah. Justin, what did you learn this week?
I learned that I need to pay attention more to concrete-bound thinking. And I didn't realize how concrete-bound leftist socialists were. I mean, it explains a lot, even if you think about, like, Antifa. why they think it's okay to just punch a Nazi, because they purely see it as a concrete battle. You know, this isn't a battle of ideas. It's just, oh, this dude, he's literally physically evil, so if we stop that physical evil, we will stop the problem. From that sense, like, I get that logic, but it's completely dropping the idea that, no, the evil is the ideas, and, you know, people physically have a right to exist, and it's the ideas that we need to fight the battle on.
Yeah, interesting. Well, if you learned something this week, why don't you let us know at The Midside on Twitter. One other thing I learned, by the way, is that Neckbeard is a horribly acneed pirate. Just the worst acne of any pirate ever. So,
arr, Neckbeard.
Exactly. So you can tell us what you learned on social media at The Midside everywhere, Instagram, Snapchat, Facebook, all the social medias. And you can go to themidside.com/podcast, where you can listen to all of the previous episodes of the podcast. You can also listen to the Snyder series at themidside.com/podcast, or you can listen to the first episode of Nolan Notes about Christopher Nolan's first film, or you can listen to the first couple of episodes of Belichick Your Premises. Listen to that. That's like four fucking podcast series, guys. What the hell is going on? I am not getting paid enough for this shit. Speaking of getting paid, we love money. You can go to patreon.com/themidside and choose to support this show financially. Basically what it is you sign up to give us a couple bucks, a couple cents, whatever it is, every time we produce a piece of content. So when we take our vacation to Belize and we don't produce content, we don't get paid. That's how that works. It's awesome. You can also go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating there. We have lots of 5-star ratings, and we'd like even more because we're fucking narcissists. What else? Oh, liberty.me, folks. Love the syndication there. This episode was particularly libertarian. Not going to lie to you guys. It was a little bit libertarian.
Buy our shirts.
Buy our shirts at themidside.com/store. Lots of shirts there. And then the most important thing you can do, the number one thing that you, the listener, the midsider, can do to continue your journey is to tell a friend. Tell a friend about the show. And we grow. That's how the community grows. That's how we get more Midsiders. That's how we take over the world and we get President Midside instead of President Snowflake. So tell a friend, Patreon, iTunes, website, store, all the podcasts. And until next time, I love you.
Whoa, that got intimate. This concludes your journey into the Midside. I'm Justin Emlesneski reminding you that if things get tough, take a step back and witness the farce.
I love you.